So I'm going to introduce the topic by going, this is a 202 course, so we assume everybody pretty much knows what form-based codes are, but I thought I would quickly, just because we don't know who all has what background, quickly go through the basic structure and organization of typical form-based codes, focusing on the experience that we've had in implementing them. And in my practice over the last 15 years, we've worked on a lot of the early form-based codes in California, and I'm going to show you some examples of what's happened with a couple of those. So we're going to go through the basic components, sort of the kit of parts, if you will, for the assembly of neighborhoods and towns. And then a couple quick case studies, and then I'll pass it on to Bill if he's here, and to Chad if he's not. So the essential intention of form-based codes, of course, is to make places that are more complex and more interesting than are often delivered by conventional codes, where the public realm, as you can see in this slide, is tightly and integrally connected. Oh, yes, please, yes. We can't see from up. Well, I can see because it's on my screen. The panelists are going to sit out there where so we can see each other's presentation. It'll make it easier to talk about them later. The tight connection between the public realm and the private development, and the sorts of messy and inherently much more interesting interconnections between private space and public space. The core idea, of course, is creating and shaping public space mainly with buildings, which is one of the twists that creates challenges at the implementation phase, because so the planning profession has not always focused so much on buildings, and it's not that the planning profession hasn't dealt with buildings, but the balance is different. And so some of the skill sets and ways of thinking as the projects are going through the public process, the rules for the building form are as important as the land use regulations, an emphasis on mixed use and mixed housing types rather than separated monocultures. A greater attention to the streetscape and the design of the public realm beyond the functional characteristics of the public realm, such as moving cars and making water go downhill. The standards for building form and mass are consciously based on either the existing context or the intended future context in the case of places that don't have a strong character already. In order for these to be effective, because they are more work, but they're worth it, but you must have a lot of public participation, a lot of analysis of existing conditions, and a lot of political support. So the basic pieces are the urban pattern, that is the street, block, lots, and open space. That's basically the skeleton upon which the whole structure is built. The urban design, that is essentially the appearance of the public realm and the way it is fleshed out. And then the buildings, which are really the meat on that skeleton. So the form-based codes, of course, include the key conventional code standards: building placement, with setbacks, height limits, coverage, and parking and landscaping regulations. And then they add to that a regulating plan which assigns neighborhood zones that map not only the intensity, which conventional zoning codes do, but also the form and character of the place, not ignoring land use, but de-emphasizing it. The structure is of most form-based codes is related to the transect, with which I'm sure you're all pretty familiar, which assigns an environmental character to each part of a city based on the continuum of most rural to most urban. T1 being nature untouched, T2 being nature touched but still fundamentally rural. T3 is the suburban ideal of living in nature or near it. And as long as this doesn't go on for 15 or 30 miles at a time, you actually are near nature. T4 being traditional neighborhood development with a diversity of housing types and uses. T5 being the downtown of a small city or a neighborhood center of a larger city. T6 occurring only in large cities. The most urban, the hardest, the landscape relegated to small spaces and the buildings dominant, pulled up to the street. And then special districts, which are monocultural, but intentionally and usefully so, campuses, industrial parks, etc. So in form-based codes, build two lines often replace setback lines. The intention isn't to describe where you may not build, but rather to describe where you really should build. Frontage type requirements, the interconnection between the public and the private, really probably the most important single thing, in that the space, the town really is the space in between the buildings, and the frontage is how that's shaped. And building type requirements that rather than treating buildings as something which can be continuously varied from just changing the FAR as sort of one decimal point at a time, that actually they happen in increments of whole buildings that have specific characters. And the way we've been describing them in our recent codes is treating them as functional organisms. It's really focusing more, some form-based codes have tended to treat buildings sort of as an artifact to be replicated, and I think it's very important that buildings be understood as living organisms, so we tend to describe them in terms of their performance standards, describing how they sit on the site, how the frontage interacts with the public realm, how access is taken, and how the landscaping on the private lot relates to the building and how it shapes the private spaces on the lot and the semi-private spaces. And street standards, of course, are considered as entire spaces that are part of an immersive environment rather than just something to move cars or water. So I'll just quickly go through a case study of a code that we're working on right now. It's an interesting small city in Monterey County in California, south of about an hour and a half south of San Francisco. The original city, you can see with where the words King City are, just above it is an addition which started out as a beautiful TND designed by Moulin Polizoides a number of years ago, which then the two developers didn't get along and it split in half. And it's under construction now, the Mills Ranch portion, designed beautifully by UDA. The portion we're working on is the downtown addition, which is across the tracks from downtown, and then a small extension of that. And then out there to the east, that thing you see that's the size of the existing town, is a farmer's hope that he can get entitlement for his ranch, which is on the far side of the airport and under the landing pattern and various things. But that's likely to be farther away in time. The property we're working on was actually subdivided in 1908 by the Spreckles family, which came down from San Francisco and planted sugar beets. And it's been spinach since then. And the city decided that it wanted to grow, so it approached our clients, who are friends of mine who've been farming the property for a long time. So we prepared, in a design charrette with the community, we prepared a master plan which kept the historic plat substantially intact but tweaked it various ways for various reasons. At the bottom of the slide, you can see the portion that abuts the railroad in the downtown got commercial there, a lined supermarket. and live, work, and mixed-use buildings that take advantage of the ability to back up to the tracks and provide some good slugs of parking. The hope is that this will provide an anchor for the mostly dead end of their main street, which is Broadway. It used to be the highway, and when the freeway bypassed the town, surprise, it died. And so we're hoping to put an anchor at that end of it. So it starts with very specific design intentions about the way that spaces will be made. This is a greenway along one of their major streets. There's one of the very important functional characteristics here is we're going to plant a lot of really huge trees because they have incredible wind that goes all the time. So actually, we need to revise these renderings and have all the trees leaning, because there's no tree in town that grows straight up, but they all serve a very vital function. So the regulating plan then assigns the most intense urban character, which is not very intense. This is California, and this is a small town. So intense for them is three stories. And that's the rust color at the bottom. Then fading to a transitional neighborhood center zone, which is the darker tan color, and fading to the lightest yellow, which is the neighborhood edge zone. So I'll quickly go through the components that comprise this, and then I'll show you some built results of a couple other. So the framework, of course, is the street network. This was supposed to be a five-laner. We've recast it as a three-laner with a nice median, and the city council went for it, thank goodness. And they're building a bridge on it right now that's only two lanes, so that if you've got a new two-lane bridge, nobody's going to come back and do a five-laner. That's the extension of the main street, which will go on further to the east. East is up, sorry. Later. And it's very important in this case. We have a lot of concerns at the council level about whether the streets are wide enough. Another surprise. So we're very carefully explaining to them that these ones you won't have any issues on, and those little yellow ones you'll never be more than a few hundred feet from one that you don't have to worry about so much. So the standards then are based on precedents. This is not a gorgeous precedent, but it's a one that's actually Main Street in Ventura. That's my office on the left. We've just done a corridor plan for this corridor. But it's comforting to them to know that you can actually get 15,000 cars a day through essentially a two-laner. Then the secondary streets, again, based on precedents. And relatively local precedents. It doesn't do too much good to show pictures in California of built projects in Florida or Europe. And then the neighborhood streets calibrated to these are streets that have been working just fine for many, many years. But defining very carefully how those streets work. Alleys are another thing that the there's a precedent with that's recently built in Hercules. Works just fine, but we've found that they still are concerned that maybe they won't work. So we've gone to a lot of effort to show and drawn this very precisely. So a lot of the development of form-based codes and actually getting them adopted has a lot to do with making people comfortable that these new ideas are actually going to work. So, for instance, they're worried about whether we'll have enough parking, and no matter how much you talk about how when you don't have any curb cuts, there's a lot more parking on the street than you show it. And then when there's a concern that maybe nobody will actually use the parking in the alley, you show that, well, you can really put a lot of parking back there. And you can park very big things if you need to, and they won't be in your front yard. So little by little. Then the frontage types, going from the least urban on the left to the most urban at the right. We've found that illustrating them copiously is helpful because the palette of frontage types has been so diminished in recent years that having graphics that explain both when you're getting the code adopted and when you're actually using it, having graphics that are easily understood by everyone to show the effect on the relationship between the public way and the building is very helpful. So going from the common yard and the porch and fence. And then in our codes, we're illustrating them in section with performance specifications written and in various axonometric and photographic views. And having the rules in there is one thing. Having them understood by all the participants is another thing. So then the declension, I mean, everybody pretty much gets the porch and fence, but then when you get to door yards and stoops, I know stoops are easy to understand back here, but there just aren't very many in the West. With local and regional examples, the more we put recently built examples rather than historic precedents, the better it goes. Then the more urban types, going from the forecourt and the very useful light court type, again, showing them with photographs and explaining how they work. And the most urban types, which are very complicated to explain to the engineers who really can't figure out why you would put your building in their street. But we have wonderful examples like the one on the right of that having been done exactly that way in our state's capital a long time ago, where all the lawyers are, so they figure they can figure that out. We have arcades, thank goodness. This is Malaga Cove in Rancho Palos Verdes. So we have some types, but we're importing other types, but very carefully and not without thinking it through. We're trying very hard in our codes to choose elements to the extent possible that are for which there are regional precedents, so you don't get escaped exotic species running around from somewhere else. And then we spend a lot of time on the building typologies, ranging from the least urban to the most urban. And again, we're illustrating these with more and more three-dimensional drawings. The palette running from front yard house, larger lots, and smaller lots. Again, focusing on how the building relates to its context, how access is provided for pedestrians, how access is provided for vehicles, and how open space and landscaping participate in the lot. The side yard house, which is again not much used on the West Coast, this is a group of them that we built a few years ago, which surprised everyone with how much money they sold for, so now they're fairly popular. Again, focusing on the functional characteristics of them, how they perform. The duplexes, this is an up and down duplex from LA. This is describing how, but we mix in, we've got some Kentlands in there. Describing how they function. The triplex, quadplex type, which along with the duplexes are very comforting to most places we work because they're basically house, they're so house-like. So they get you over the dreaded multifamily hump by looking like houses. And this is a very interesting type. On this charrette, we're joined by Optica's design from Berkeley, and they worked out. Well, we'd heard from the community that a lot of, in that context, very often multiple, and with the price of housing, what it is in California, very often multiple families will go together to buy a house. Well, we took that together with the fact that we'd inherited this 1908 tract that had very deep lots in many of the blocks, and so we thought, well, why don't we design a house for a deep lot that's actually intended to house multiple families. So this is essentially a front house and a back house and a middle house. So you've basically got the second, a big second unit at the back, a small primary dwelling at the front, and they're connected by a smaller dwelling that opens to a court. So it's sort of a composite of a house and a side yard house. It's kind of a composite of a side yard house and a bungalow court. We generally include bungalow courts. They're very beautiful, unique, fairly not uniquely Californian, but characteristically Californian type, where multiple dwellings share a lot. The villa and mansion apartment, we Californians really like houses better than everything else. So you can even get up to like an 8 or 10 unit building that's still essentially a house. This is my favorite building in the town I live in. It has views of the ocean, and it's a simple apartment building, but very elegantly designed with an entry court, a very little entry court. Then row houses and townhouses, which are not so common in the West. So they get designed often, so they sort of look like little houses that are attached to each other. Again, that is much more comforting to the Western palate. Live-work has been increased. Well, this is from the East Coast. We have actually built a row of these recently in the Bay Area. Essentially just row houses, but with flexible use at the ground floor at the front. And commercial blocks, those typical mixed-use buildings, again, with prescriptions about how access happens. Very intent on making sure that visitor access to the dwellings comes from the front, not from the parking lot in back. Again, we try to show a variety of conditions so that people don't get the idea that these are artifacts that have to be placed in a certain way, but rather a way of thinking about making a building. And then those components get compiled into neighborhood zones. So the most urban of that range of types that we've offered are compiled into the rust-colored zone at the core, snuggled up against the downtown. Well, as close as you can get to the downtown with the old highway right-of-way and Southern Union Pacific's 100-foot right-of-way. There is a site for a passenger rail station just below. I don't have a pointer, but that's okay. Just below the colored area, you see the tracks, and just on the other side of the tracks is a site for a future passenger rail station. So we're developing transit-oriented densities in the rust-colored portion with prescriptions of both building type and minimum lot size, and prescriptions about what percentage of the total dwellings within that zone may be of a particular type. We want to, and this is the neighborhood edge. I've started at the outside, tricked you. This is the neighborhood edge. So we start with the least urban, types, and we prescribe that no more than a certain percentage of the total buildings in that zone may be of one type, so that we don't get one zone filling up with one type. And then we assign we assign setback criteria. That obviously the greatest setbacks are at the edge, the least are at the center. And the frontage types that are assigned to this zone are the least urban, the common yard and porch and fence. And then the character of that zone is illustrated, in this case, emphasizing at the edge the 1.5 story house. That's another really popular one where in California, where people are really worried, very worried about three-story buildings and a little worried about two-story buildings. So the indigenous 1.5 story that, well, it's all over the country, of course, but the variations on bungalows that have the second floor beneath the roof provide a very nice scale. Then moving in a click, you can see that the largest lot houses on the upper left there have fallen away, and the lot widths are narrowing a bit, and the triplex and quadplex types are sneaking in, but limited to a relatively small percentage of the total, and the slightly more urban frontage types of the terrace and the stoop have been added to the available palette. So this is a bit, this edge has the slightly higher intensity buildings juxtaposed with a broad green because it's next to a large street. And this illustrates that same palette of types and setbacks in a condition where there's alleys provided. You'll note there's no driveways. And then the same, essentially the same intensity, but provided with driveways, side yard driveways. Then the neighborhood general is the next click up. Neighborhood general 3 is the transitional type where you see the rear yard houses still are there, but the intensity goes all the way up to the small apartment buildings. The setbacks are narrowed. The parking is in every case at the rear. And you can see the frontage types well, this is the same palette of frontage types, but with the building setbacks reduced. And then and that's an illustration of that intention where buildings, especially with the Monterey style, this is Monterey County, so we have included that style, bring the buildings very close to the street. Only the nice thing for this style is that in the core, it's used where the balconies project right over the sidewalk, but it can also be used just outside the core in conditions where if the buildings are set back, so there's landscaping beneath the balconies of the second floor. And then the neighborhood center is the zone that comes up against the downtown. It's actually more intense than their existing downtown, which is mostly all one- and two-story buildings. But that's in the process of being reconsidered as well. So you can see the building types come up to commercial buildings, mixed use, work-live, and live-work. The setbacks come right up to the sidewalk, and the frontage types are the most urban, the arcade, gallery, shop front, stoop, and forecourt, and an illustration of those design intentions. And then we've provided, and we don't always regulate architecture by style, but we find that when you're dealing with a lot of merchant builders often work better with style than they do with more abstract devices. So in this case, we've defined the basic building, the basic approaches to the design of the architecture, how the components are put together. But then we've described the regionally meaningful styles, including the Monterey, showing proportions and elements, facade organization, because schools have to some extent stopped teaching that, and then materials and colors. So the Spanish Revival style, same information. Victorian, but these mathing diagrams are very key, showing a variety of options for massing them. Again, so that you don't get, hopefully you don't get designers copying, but rather understanding the techniques. So the Victorian style. The Italianate, we chose sort of an Italianate farmhouse style from the area with a nod to the more rural roots. Craftsman, of course, you basically have to include that in California. We've shown Art Deco as an accent style to be used in the downtown. That lower right picture is actually a building in King City, a wonderful auditorium building built in the late 20s. And then the Tudor or storybook style that escaped from Hollywood in the 20s when there were more art directors than there were films to design, I think. And they started designing houses for all their friends and became a very interesting accent style. There's a few in almost every town. And so we've specified that there be a few, not rows and rows. And then we assign them to specific locations to create special urban character around particular public spaces. And finally, of course, landscape, the clothing of the public realm based on regional, environmental, and spatial characteristics. I'm going to go really quickly through a case study of a project I've been working on for the last 8 years. It's a site just north of San Francisco that was first, they made black powder there, later they made dynamite, and later they made fertilizer. And that's what the site looked like in the early 60s. So then there was a lot of environmental cleanup, as you might expect. Here's what it looked like when we got it, with a very beautiful little remnants of a factory town on the hilltop at the right, and then the manufacturing leftovers in the valley. Have a creek that had been turned into a ditch and is now being made back into a creek, coming through it, creating structure. And then major streets coming in as boulevards, neighborhood now built. I'll show you a couple pictures. Another small piece of a neighborhood. This valley was really carved up by the environmental cleanup process and the Corps of Engineers jurisdictional boundaries. So it's really a series of islands, and we've wrestled with that. Dover Cole did a code for the property just to the north of the slide here. It's really sort of just by the luck of the draw, it's sort of a series of villages with difficult connections between them. That area there, the transit village and the historic town center, are currently being designed in a final form. That point is a future fantastic park. And then a new Amtrak station is being designed for that location. So we prepared this plan of neighborhoods in 1999 that's the 5-minute walk from the transit station at the center. The precedents we needed for a lot of the architecture were right on site. Actually, these houses had been dotted around through the hills and were consolidated in the 80s onto a single site by a builder who then built some really crummy apartments on the land that these houses had been moved off. But the good news is that they built a beautiful little street of those historic houses. So we took a lot of the cues for the architecture from them, developed a regulating plan that assigns the specific house type. This part I'm showing you here is the first part built, which of course is the rooftops that you need to get the commercial to be supported at the center. So these specify various lot sizes and architectural types. And the usual prescriptions of building placement, where encroachments may be provided, where parking's provided, and the profile and use. Very detailed pattern book that was prepared by John Regan Architects from Columbus. We worked with them very closely for several years, with clear three-dimensional drawings of the massing that paid off. I'll show you in a second. Clear delineations of how elements are designed, openings, and materials. And then most importantly, as it turns out, examples of facades. This project was built by a merchant builder who ended up, as an expedience, basically copying a lot of these prototype drawings, which isn't probably the most ideal situation, but it beats the heck out of ugly buildings. Buildings were, the exterior architecture is not bad. You don't want to look too close at the detailing. But the implementation on this was interesting. It's picking. Aha! Excuse me. Hi, Bill. Oh, cool. Awesome. Thank you. Okay, fine. That was my I thought I was so smart having it on vibrate, but of course the mic picked it up. That's Bill. He's on his way from the airport. The implementation of this was interesting. The city was in the process of hiring a town architect for a long time, and we pinch hit in the interim. With John Regan's help, and the architecture got fairly faithfully implemented. As you can see here, these little houses were built. The first houses I showed you were built by Western Pacific Housing, and these were built by Taylor Woodrow with a great deal of care on the detailing. We were the pinch hit town architect through all the building design, and Among the chief lessons learned are that you can get a merchant builder to build reasonable facsimiles of real houses with a lot of design review. But when the, in this case, the one set of drawings that didn't get run past us was the landscape plans, which happened to also have all the fences on them. And so we got white picket fences in front of dark-colored craftsman buildings, which hurt. We got, and the frontages really are where things fell apart. The frontages are certainly the most important in that they are define the character of the place. They are also tricky because the architects, civil engineers, and landscape architects all have to come together to make a frontage right. And that involves a lot of municipal departments and a lot of attention. So here we had gone to great trouble on the lower left there to get a variety of stoops and porches on the buildings. And then, lo and behold, on the landscape plans that we never saw, there's the same little raised brick garden in front of all 25 houses. And worse yet, at the last minute, the city became the power company during this process and realized that it's actually cheaper to put the transformers above grade in the parkway strip rather than in the vaults that had been designed. And then when you do that, of course, someone might back into them. So in this relatively decent little neighborhood, we have occasionally these little bollard farms that have popped up. You can actually make porches with slab-on-grade construction fairly well. I made this little sketch thinking that it would just inform the builder. Every porch in the whole project has that same detail. They just kept building my sketch over and over. That detailing makes a huge amount of difference. These are the window details that Taylor and the porch details that Taylor Woodrow built. Just very beautifully made, very careful, beautiful metal flashing, careful work. And sometimes, not all surprises are bad. This was supposed to be a bridge. We fought endlessly with the builder. And they came back finally with a design that had real rock and little copper caps on the posts, bless their hearts.